Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. It is a party cast. We've got Chris here. We've got Brooke here. We've got Pernell here. We've got Big Adam here. How is everybody doing?
Cold and rainy.
Your face is a party cast.
Got him.
Oh, shit. Oh, he's out of line, but he's right.
Straight out the gates with the sick burn.
I guess my only response to that is...
Go fuck yourself.
I mean, that's fair. Wow. That's also valid.
Yeah. Oh, we got the soundboard. We got the soundboard in play. It's Big Adam.
You little hillbilly bitch.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, is that actually you?
No, that is my entrance music. That is that's Eddie Kingston.
Oh, shit.
The Eddie Kingston.
Yeah, we have our own, quote, entrance themes when we enter our wrestling Discord on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
That is, normally Adam's is...
You a big motherfucker.
He wanted to change things up, so he requested.
You little hillbilly bitch.
Yes, accurate. I really like that.
Mine is.
Sweet. I love that y'all have entrance music. That's awesome.
Oh, we have the soundboard on my Discord is chock full of wrestling idiocy from top to bottom. We actually have a request into Discord actually to see if we can figure out a way to get more spots to add more spots, stupid.
Because we're maxed out.
Like, my server's boosted all the way to the top. Like, you can't purchase any more spots, but we want more.
Like, we'll give you the money. Can you create a tier for us?
We will. And then...
Because then you get stuff like...
Fucking yeah!
At the touch of your fingertips.
You also get stuff like this.
Aside from my own actions, what did I do to deserve this?
Exactly.
I mean, come on.
Well, Tony Khan will pay for his crimes!
Tony Khan will indeed pay for his crimes. This is now WrestleCast. I'm calling it. Here we go. AEW for the next 3 hours.
So Hulk Hogan, what about that guy?
No!
Hey. He named his daughter Brooke. Let's give him a break. That's an amazing name.
He's also a powerful racist, so no thanks.
Oh, shit.
Don't take my childhood from me by bringing his real life persona into this. I want to remember the character, not the human. Because I haven't been
trying to convince almost everyone on this show anymore to come join us on Wednesdays for wrestling. Like, y'all need to show up sometime.
It is chaos, but there's also some rules. Like, you got to respect the promos because we all definitely want to hear the promos.
Okay, sweet.
But, like, there's...
Which even
there's
that's like, been getting stomped on lately.
it has, and I've been getting a little annoying about it, and I'm going to start cracking the whip a little bit. But,
dang.
It's turned from a group of four dudes who are just really bored and lonely during the pandemic who wanted to watch wrestling together to a weekly group three times a week of, like, 10 plus.
Whoa.
And it's crazy now. We've had like 15 people at a pay-per-view before.
We have.
It's awesome.
That's awesome. Were y'all just doing Wednesdays a couple years ago and it blew up?
We were doing, well, AEW started their TV right before the pandemic. So I was having people when I was, because my wife and I were still living in Baltimore. So we were having Baltimore friends over to watch because I was the only person that had cable subscription. And then the pandemic happened. So I just started streaming my cable service to my Discord. And the Baltimore friends would just meet me there. And that's how we would watch. That's how we kind of like overcame the
wasn't the, just the COVID human hurdle. At the start.
It was me, Matt, and then to be fair, Jono was coming and he never actually did the online thing because he also hates the internet. And then
don't we all?
Phil was actually one of the people that came to my house, but he didn't show up to the Discord era until way later. So he like missed the middle ground. But yeah, that's the story of wrestling in Adam's Discord. And yeah, we watch all the pay-per-views. We watch all the AEW television broadcasts. So it's like 3 days a week.
I joined in fairly early, and then I mentioned Tim, and you're like, yeah, invite him along. And he started showing up and just kind of exploded from there.
Snowballed from SML podcast, sometimes kind of guy, Dave K. He's a weekly. He's always there.
Danimal, who we play all the time. He'll show up every now and then.
Yeah, Dan comes through all the time.
We've had Botchamania legend Matthew show up on occasion.
Yeah, he used to come through a bunch. We had Mega Ran come through once or twice.
It's weird, the crazy community that you have on your
Discord. It's all because of MAGFest, dude. It's all because of MAGFest.
I've had that luck.
I've met a trillion people through MAGFest and just being an idiot. And that's what I'm good at. I like that's being awesome. An idiot at MAGFest. It's fun.
Sounds cool. I'm going to finally go to my first convention in July, and hopefully it won't be my last. Maybe we can make it to MAGFest. Isn't MAGFest like around Christmas?
It's like slightly after New Year's. Basically, it's like first weekend in January, right?
Nah, just the dates were announced with the theme. It's the third weekend, I believe. Third or fourth weekend this year in January.
Oh, in January. Okay.
January 23rd through 26th.
Oh, wow. There it is.
Okay, that's pretty.
Gotta go fest.
Also, wait a minute. This convention you're doing the panel for is your very first con ever?
Yeah. Well, actually, okay. I went to an anime convention before I got into anime when I was like 18 in Austin. I think I showed you guys pictures. I actually dressed up as The Rock. Speaking of wrestling, he's a nice. Dwayne Johnson's a hero. I'll send you guys some pictures. I had a big cutout and it was awesome. I got hugged by lots of anime women that day, and I was like, so this is what it's about. I can see this. Later, I got into anime. This is my first con, you know, not jumping in to be like an 18-year-old troll who then had a really wonderful time. So this is my first time as a real anime fan, and I haven't been, I guess, I went to Gen Con. That's a board game convention.
That counts. That totally counts. Time
ago.
And, that totally, you know, counts.
I'm glad I went, but I began a lifelong addiction to Mini Terrain when I went there. I did not know about Mini Terrain, and now I own a lot of it. And I spent a lot of money on this stuff when I was still a waitress, so.
The one thing that you need to understand about MAGFest before coming to MAGFest is MAGFest is not a convention in the typical sense. Ooh. At any stretch of the imagination. It's a four-day, never-ending party that has convention aspects to it.
Okay, nice. I'm a little nervous to go to this convention because I just kind of don't know what to do. I see there's a lot of ticketed events, but like I don't know what to get. Like, I'm going for a specific reason. I get to meet some internet friends, and I'm really pumped. But like, I don't know if this is the type of thing I would normally seek out. Like, it does seem pretty hectic. So
going to a convention that then charges more ticket prices for other things inside of said convention.
Yeah, I didn't realize that until recently, and I was like, dang. And then I'm
unfamiliar with that convention format. That's weird. That, at least to me, that's really weird.
I really wanted to go to the
Anime Expo. Does this?
Yeah, I bought some Butler Cafe tickets, so I'm that person now. I'm just throwing all shame away this year. But I really wanted to get to the Idea Factory.
Doing that, actually.
I don't think everything's ticketed, but a lot of it is, and a couple things I was interested in that I just figured I got to go to, you know, are not only paid, but like one of them sold out and I can't go. And I was like, man, well, the other night, like.
If there's one thing that I can tell you about MAGFest is a paid badge is a paid badge. Oh, if it's MAG content, it's part of MAGFest because that's how conventions work.
Honestly, that's what I thought too. My mind's been blown. So good to know.
Yeah, MAGFest is a good time. We got to get all of us there together.
I know Tim and Lauren go, and I really
I'd like do a show meet up really if it got scheduled and I didn't forget about it the day of. Dude, my brain is potato pudding at MAGFest, and you know that.
It's all good.
Potato pudding sounds delicious.
We had a whole bunch of people on stage for that panel, so it was.
Oh, right, yeah. Oh,
cool.
Which is available on YouTube now.
Hell yeah.
Hey, that's awesome.
So is my auction. Check it out. MAGFest Charity Auction 2024. Let's go.
Auction significantly more entertaining than my panel.
Impossible.
I'm going to watch that panel. I need to
the auction's like, crazy long. It's 3 hours, but I'm told it's funny.
That's cool. I can see you auctioning stuff off. I can hear the voice.
Oh yeah. I get a different kind of energy when I'm on that stage. I really cut loose up there. So
that's awesome.
Chris, what were you going to say?
I was going to say about 10 minutes ago, Nintendo just announced that, 3 new games just dropped on the, Game Boy Nintendo Switch Online, Super Mario Land, Alleyway, and Baseball.
Nice.
Those are like three of like the first ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. Super Mario Land is like one of my favorites. Yeah, Alleyway's good. I like Alleyway. It's one of my top 10 favorite Arkanoids. Baseball, I'm not sure.
Nice to know you have a list of top 10 Arkanoids.
I could probably come up with one pretty quickly, but I don't have it just like in front of me.
Your challenge for next week.
The only Super Mario game that I think I've played for Game Boy all the way through is Golden Coins. How would you compare that to the one that they just put out?
Well, Super Mario Land, the original, is like one of my favorites. It's actually a top 10 favorite soundtrack for me, too. As you know, my band Gimmick, our very first thing that we learned was the entire soundtrack to Super Mario Land that we play in one big medley. Wow. And yeah, so I'm passionate about Super Mario Land. I would say it's very short. It's a little easy. And the controls are weird if you're used to the big boy console Marios. But I think it's a very good game. I really love it, and I could go on all day about it. 6 Golden Coins is also good. I think that 6 Golden Coins suffers a little bit from them trying to get a Super Nintendo sprite on that screen, and so there's not a lot of you can't really see a lot of what's going on.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, yeah. Mario's taking up most of the real estate. It's got the what's that TurboGrafx-16 game, China Warrior? It's got that problem.
Too much detail on a system that can't handle that much detail.
Yeah, if you Google like TG-16 China Warrior or TurboGrafx China Warrior, you'll see what I mean. It's your guy is like a third of the screen large because they wanted a super huge sprite, and for that reason, you can't see more than 3 feet in front of you.
Right.
But see, you know, it has that a little bit, but it's like, it's also a charming game, and I have to give it props, of course, for introducing one of my favorite characters, Wario, even though he's a little weird in that one.
Just a little weird. I think we can all agree.
Yeah, he's a weirdo in that one, which is great. He also, like, that final stage, Mario's castle, which is odd that Mario has a castle, but that last stage is kind of bullshit, but it's okay.
I did just like that your ending changed depending on how much money you saved up.
Oh, yeah. Something like that. Funny enough, I own 2 copies of 6 Golden Coins on the Game Boy. The reason I bought the second one is because the first one, the battery went out in it, so it won't save. And then the second one saved once, and then the battery went out on it, and so it doesn't save either. So I have 2 copies of it that I need to like actually take to some place and get the batteries changed out, because I think it requires soldering for Game Boy carts.
Oh, I mean, if you have 2 of them, you should donate one of them to science and try to do it yourself. It would be good learning experience for other carts.
True, but I literally don't have the tools, so it would be pretty messy.
You can get a soldering iron kit off of Amazon. I literally did this to do something similar for like $30.
I would not trust myself with the soldering iron.
I didn't think I would either, but then I watched a couple of YouTube videos. I'm serious. I watched a couple of YouTube videos, and I just kind of learned how to do it.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where it's like now I could do that just so that I can say I have a Super Mario Land 2-6 Golden Coins copy that saves. But also, like, I got an analog pocket that does save states anyway.
Yeah, I got it on.
I got it on two different EverDrives that also save state and have battery saves.
No, I get that emulation. I'm a really terrible retro hardware guy. I love retro hardware. That's all. I absolutely appreciate the new wave. I have nothing bad to say. There's nothing bad. I just really love the old technology, so I love to try to restore it as much as I can.
Yeah, I have. I still have old Game Boys and stuff, but yeah, they frequently have problems.
I don't have one that does not have a problem,
aside from the ones that, you know, use emulation in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all right. I ain't picky. I have an Anbernic handheld emulator that doesn't have a working headphone jack, so yeah, I'm screwed there too. The Pocket's the only thing that works right now portably that's not like a Switch or a 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Pernell, what kind of emulation situation you got going on the deck?
I think I just did MU deck or whatever, emulation station, MU deck. I play, at this point I have damn near everything I could possibly want on it. Anything up through like a PS2, Saturn even, which was a real wonderful thing to get because I could play things like Dragon Force 2 on there and the Shining Force sequels.
That's awesome.
The Steam Deck has been the best gaming device I could have possibly ever purchased, like flat out. Because let's say, even if Steam gets weird and it's like, well, you can't get online and you can't validate your games, which I learned that was a thing that pissed me off, but whatever. Even if that were to happen, I could still say, well, I have all these cool emulators on here, and I pretty much built a library up of pretty much anything I possibly want to play. And stuff that I didn't think about, I could still get. If not through me, then I have a couple friends who are obsessed with, like, getting all the good games. So I can just ask them, hey, you have this ROM I can download and play on there? He's like, sure. And then people have been like, why don't you sell yourself? I'm like, because I like the stuff I already have. But one day I might have to sell them. Whether because of space or money or because I have a midlife crisis and decide video games are not, don't have a place in it. Either way, I could still have every game I want on this one handheld device. And that is the best damn thing ever. It's great. I adore it. And that does include things like Game Boy and Game Boy Advance. I think it even can handle the DS, but it just doesn't feel right on there. So I won't even bother. But it's just a fantastic device for emulation. And I am glad to
have
it.
Part of me wants to buy a Steam Deck just so I could play Great Greed on the Game Boy again.
I mean,
it's real good on the analog pocket.
I really want
if you decide to, let me know. That might be my catalyst to buy an OLED or something. So keep me in mind if you're like, hey, I'll buy a used one off of you or something.
I was considering an Odin 2 because I hear that that's also a really good one. It's just a little bit smaller, and it can do up through the same systems that you were specifying. But I don't know. Pretty happy at where I am right now.
One game that unfortunately I don't believe is Steam Deck verified is a. One of our review games we could talk about tonight.
There it is. Oh, man. Segway.
Should we dive into reviews? We only got a handful to talk about tonight. We could probably knock them out pretty quick.
You say
that. I think so.
All right, Adam, are you ready to start us off?
Sure.
All right. Well, let's start. First game to talk about tonight. MotoGP 24, developed and published by Milestone, released May 2nd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, PC for $49.99. Rev up your engines, MotoGP 24 is back. Dive into the heart-pounding action of the 2024 season and immerse yourself in the thrills of unexplored landscapes, all thanks to the revolutionary Riders Market. Adam, tell us about your time with MotoGP 24.
So, MotoGP 24. MotoGP 24 is a game that I was actually kind of looking at just because I'm big into the racing games, as some of y'all may know. I keep up with a lot of car racing games. I also really like dirt bike stuff. I've been riding dirt bikes since I was like 11 years old. So I am now a little bit on the older side, so I have a lot of time on two wheels, thousands of hours on two wheels. When it comes to sport bike racing, my brain turns into just split pea soup. I cannot get around the track without beginner's assists in any street bike racing game that I've ever played. This game is no different in that, but because they have an actual built-in AI system that adapts to your successes and failures as you're riding along, it adapts the assists to you, and I fully accredit that system to being the only reason I was able to get around the track without crashing. Like, I'm positive that that's the only reason that that happened. I mean, you can go into this game being an absolute buffoon with a controller and still get around the track because of how good the assist system that they put in this game was. Now, my problem...
I don't know if it would help me, but...
No, it would. Because, like, you can start this game and quite literally not move the thumbstick, and you'll go around the track because the game's just like, well, this person doesn't get turning's a thing yet, so we're going to get the AI to do it or help them out in a very large way. It's kind of crazy. But the thing about motorcycle racing that I just don't get is, and how it differs from car racing, is you have to start turning into a turn infinitely earlier than you would in a four-wheeled vehicle. And I can't wrap my head around S-turns. Like, because you have to start turning into the second turn before you even get out of the first one. And I can't make my brain do that. After playing racing games for years and years and years, I can't untrain my brain to do that. I don't know what it is. It's not only the fact of the turning, but it's the actual, and I mean, this happens in real life too, in the world of sport bike racing. They lean the machine so far over that it takes forever to get back up center. So it feels like you're not going straight when sometimes you are. And getting over that mental hurdle is also really difficult to do, because that's not something that you do when you're just riding a motorcycle or even going at it on a dirt bike. You don't lean that far. So going in a straight line while leaning 30 degrees to the right is real odd and very hard to get used to in playing this game for about 20 hours. All that to say, the game itself is actually great. It is. It's got a pretty decent sized community. I went through a little bit of the career mode. It's your standard racing career mode. You're building your character. You're setting up the bike of, you know, how you would like it to look aesthetically via color palettes and stuff like that. You get your rider, get the gear set up, get your helmet built out the way you like it with the colors and all. And then, you know, you start building your legacy as a MotoGP racer. Again, I could not get away from the easiest possible assist mode, but that being said, I was participating in races, and I was making it around the track, and while I wasn't winning, per se, even on the easiest settings, as embarrassing as that is, I was having a reasonable time. What else? I can't overstate how good controlled AI is for this game. That's not something that I had ever even thought about in a racing game, but with the physics that are as complicated as they are with racing a motorcycle, especially one like in a car, if you floor it, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? You're going to burn out. The car might slide out from you. You can let off the throttle and you're fine, right? On a motorcycle, if you goose the throttle all the way, the bike is coming ass over teacups, and you're going to be staring at the sun. That's how physics works. You know what I mean? So that's all the... You have to overcome all that kind of stuff. And like I said, after playing racing games and racing games and racing games, all based on four-wheeled cars, getting out of that mindset is near impossible. And the AI made everything on that. That was the biggest takeaway for me from this game, was how good they built the novice system. So literally, I'm telling you, anybody can pick this game up and make it around the track. Anybody.
That's a change from some of their older games.
Yeah. Yeah, this was the first MotoGP that I have played, and I've, from what I understand, this was the first year that they have put this in-depth of a system into it. The other thing, now this has been in other games, this is not a new technology, but it's something that they keep doing, and I really actually like it, and it's something that Milestone does in their racing games, the development house. When you're in a race, you go through your standard practices, your standard qualifying, your standard races, all that stuff. But in between the races, you're like back at the paddock, right? You're in the garage with the bike and you have your engineers and your mechanics and stuff like that with you. And they have this thing called a guided setup where you basically just tell the engineer how you feel the bike is not performing the way you would expect it to. And then the game automatically takes what you have, you know, clicked on. The bike's not turning well. It's understeering and it's not accelerating out of corners better. It'll take your pit time away from you. Like, it'll eat into your practice time like any kind of bike alteration or, you know, upgrade or change would. It takes real amount of time to do it while you're at the racetrack.
Yeah.
The guided setup does it for you. So you don't have to know, oh, well, I need to go into the ECU and change this. And I need to change this rear braking damper and change the front rebound to accompany for this, you know, physic fact that
I don't even know what those words mean.
Right. And I only know what the majority of them mean, if I'm honest with you. So, like, the way Milestone has approached this is really cool. You can not only control and play this game as an absolute just baboon with a controller, you can obviously also play it if you're a pro and you're not using any assists whatsoever. I'm sure the game's amazing once you actually know what you're doing. But they also made it where you can feel like you're are still a race car driver or a rider in this point by giving feedback of, I don't like how this is accelerating. I wish this bike would just slow down faster. Or I wish that, you know, the bike turned a little bit more aggressively. Or I wish the bike didn't turn so daggum aggressively. You can just say that to the mechanic through the guided tour option in the paddock, and they do it for you. That rules. I thought that was awesome, because you don't have to be a mechanic. While basic knowledge of, like, understeer and oversteer and, like, really broad terms like that would definitely be helpful, you don't need to know those things to improve the experience for yourself. They allow you to help yourself a lot in this game, which is really cool. And I will say two more things. One, the online experience. It's not on the devs. I get that. A lot of people just looking for crashes. A lot of people just looking to be angry. Your standard casual racing game stuff. Can't fault the dev. Can't fault the game for that. Gamers are lame. We all know that about ourselves. Gamers happen to be lame. And if they're not having a good time, they tend to want to ruin the experience for everybody else. At least in racing games, on a casual sense. The other thing is, this game is the very reason that I realized that my controller was broken. I didn't know, or at least realize, that my controller had a 15.5% upward drift. But after not being able to control the bike at friggin' all, because it was going all over the damn place, I finally went into Windows calibration and realized my controller was busted. So thank you, Milestone, for that. Your detailed controller inputs making the bike look like it was possessed by a crack-infested alien assisted me in letting me know that my controller is broken. So, cheers to a new controller, Milestone. I appreciate you.
Cool.
It definitely wasn't their fault. I didn't, like, break it out of rage or anything. if anything, I was impressed on how well this game handled an idiot like me. And allowed me to actually get around the circuit, which was unexpected, to be very honest with you.
Very cool. Well, the game clocks in at $49.99. What is your verdict on this one?
I would say if you want to check out a motorcycle racing game that is going to kick your ass if you want it to, but is absolutely ready and willing to hold a novice's hand through the absolute first time you've picked up a controller and played a motorcycle racing game, through your professional streaming racing career. MotoGP 24 is pretty great. I would say this one is a do buy, but I maybe wait until the summer sale. Gotcha. I would say thumbs up, but let's see what the summer sale has to offer.
Sounds good. All right, Adam, that is it for you. We will let you get going. Thank you as always for coming on and hanging out with us.
Well, thank you for having me. It was great. We talked about MAGFest and racing games and my baboon hands. And we got some wrassles in there. I said hello to friends.
Indeed. I appreciate you all. Someone in chat said Copycat Jones, and I'm just like, we have a button for that.
Oh, Jack Jones!
Oh, Jack Jones! Wait, who's a copycat Jones? Who's being a copycat of what? Who's copying what cat? People
joining chat and entering a contest.
Oh. Well, you better join the more contests, contest join in chat.
Yeah.
Get those entries in now.
Contest.
Listen to me. I know things about stuff.
Contest Jones.
Contest Jones. All right, y'all. Thanks for having me.
Night.
I look forward to our next racing game interaction.
Yeah. Sounds good. Have yourself a good night, Adam.
Later, y'all.
Later, sir.
Peace. Next game to talk about is Ziggy, developed and published by Aphil Games, released May 14th on Xbox One, Series X, and S for $4.99. Get ready for an exciting and adrenaline-filled experience with Ziggy, the newest 2D platform game. Brooke, you check this one out. Purnell, did you get a chance to check this one out, too?
I dabbled in a little, yes.
All right, well, Brooke, nice. How about you start us off? What is going on in Ziggy?
I'll pop us off. This is a small game. We'll see if Purnell has any notes that I don't. Ziggy's a precision platformer, and it feels like it was created by people like me, people who grew up in the 90s based on the style and graphics of the music, and then later went on to find themselves enjoying stuff like Super Meat Boy and likely Celeste as well, as I feel like this game feels a little like both of those to me and how it handles what sort of platforming moves it demands of you, the player, if you're trying to complete it. I picked up this game, I played a couple levels, and I immediately was like, damn, this game is harder than I thought it would be for a game that costs a few bucks. But even though I struggle to complete games that I find this technically challenging, I did not find that to be a bad thing with this game. Let's start with my favorite thing to talk about, the tutorial. Wowee. 2 weeks in a row, I have nothing bad to say about any game's tutorials. This will never happen again. This is a miracle. This tutorial was great. It's very short. It's two or three levels long. I can't remember if it's two or three. Maybe Purnell can call me on that. The game definitely makes you sure that you can learn all the moves you need to play this game, because you absolutely cannot move on until you learn enough mechanics to survive and really get the concept. And I always really, really appreciate that. This tutorial is pretty much all I ask. Just make sure I'm good to go. And there aren't many. There aren't many mechanics to learn in this game. We can jump, of course. We can also double jump. We can also dash, something Celeste fans will be mega familiar with. This is a super important mechanic. We can dash midair, and we're going to have to do it a lot if we want to complete this game. We can wall jump. I don't know what else to compare it to, so I'm going to say, think of the Mario games where you can wall jump to climb and get to higher ground. Sometimes you ricochet between two small walls. Sometimes you just kind of jump up on top of yourself to get up the wall. You can always tell when I go ad lib and I'm not reading my notes anymore. I immediately break down. So I took this game and Joe showed it to me. I was like, this looks cute. And I took it because my first loves were all platformers. Sonic 2, Super Mario World pretty much single-handedly sealed the deal that gaming was going to be an addiction for life for me. And then when I was in my 20s and I thought I'd outgrown platformers, I thought I was too cool for them. I learned I was super wrong because I found a game, I don't know, maybe you've heard of it, Cave Story. It's one of my faves. And then I didn't put that game down. Even such a good game. Even I didn't put it down even one day until I beat its hell level, which took me 3 whole months. This was actually around the time I was meeting Chris in real life because I was in that house. Nice. Yo, I was obsessed. This is all I did after.
That's one of my favorite levels, though.
It's so cool, and I'm so glad I stuck with it, and I definitely hyperfixated here. So seeing me go so hard for 3 months every day on this game until I couldn't rest, a friend then introduced me to maybe my favorite platformer ever, Spelunky. This was back in my day, of course, when it was freeware, and I hadn't had a buffed console release by a team instead of one genius man. So while I do have a long history of falling deeply in love with precision platformers, I'm used to getting something else in them besides the precision platformer and difficulty part, if you feel me. Because guess what? It took me 3 months to 100% Cave Story because I'm not amazing at these games naturally. I'm like Gon in Hunter x Hunter, any ever shown an anime protagonist, in that I have this unique ability to get the shit beaten out of me a thousand times and I keep getting bad. Oh shit, I didn't even realize I used that word. That's amazing. But usually I need just a little bit more than just dying going on as the thing that motivates me to keep dying. In Cave Story, I had an awesome story about angsty rabbits to enjoy as I died infinitely. Y'all know I love that. And Spelunky, not even fair to compare. I had a roguelike experience with tons of mystery and discovery around every corner, every playthrough different. This was my first experience of procedurally generated stuff. Of course, this game, you know, broke the mold, so once again, not fair to compare. Celeste, which I played at 32. Don't get me started, or we will be here all night while I sob uncontrollably for 6 hours. Joe doesn't want that. So this game has a few different environments you get to play through, but mostly everything in the game stays the same. It just gets harder, and the traps get a little weirder as you go. The game offers you our usual slew of platformer traps for this sort of game, ranging from the classic walls with spiky cone-shaped triangles that kill us instantly from so many games from our childhoods, to moving arrows that go through the air that you gotta dodge in the level, to bear traps that close a second or two after you land on a platform. You definitely need to land to be able to advance, putting a very strict clock on how long you can rest on that level until you keep going. So throughout this game, you gotta jump around on your platforms. But like in some of the harder precision platformers we have available, you've also gotta master the fall from those platformers. You know what I mean? Celeste fans are all too familiar with this concept. Not sure how many other games do this too, but I bet there's a lot. We're used to jumping around on platformers and then landing on the next platform, sure. But some games make us do more. Like, there are places we can't get to unless we start jumping slash falling. And instead of letting ourselves fall all the way in real time, we have to actually dash or rocket ahead maybe halfway through, mid-jump, maybe through a tiny little window. So I don't know if I'm missing any mechanic stuff. I have a little bit more I want to say about assets. And after we go into rating, I want to talk about how achievements work on Xbox. I don't know if Purnell, what'd you play this for?
I played it on Xbox as well, if that's what you played it on.
Oh, nice. Same here. Art for this game, I thought for the price point, this is good. We have some reasonably charming pixel art. Although, here's what I wrote in my notes yet. I don't think we ever learn what Ziggy actually is. I mean, we don't in Fez either, another platform I really, really love. So fun fact, I wrote this review, and then earlier, Joe tweeted about the show. And then when I went on Twitter to retweet, I wanted to grab a screenshot of the game. And now I know that we are a bolt of lightning in this game. I had no idea, because the Steam page literally says this, and never read it until today, because I wanted to go in blind. My next part of my notes, I say, anyway, I like to think of us as a nice yellow slice of American cheese with some sunglasses. Since I used the operative word like there, I'm going to keep it. I do like to think that, even though now I know the horrible truth. So final note from me before we go into rating from my end, just want to talk music. It's good. Purnell said he dabbled in this game. I want him to know I'm pretty sure there's only one song in this whole game. I really like that song that plays in this game. The singular, though, song. We're glad it's a good song because we hear it a lot. It is a really fast and invigorating song. It's got a lot of, like, kind of clubby 90s elements to it. I can jam out to it for about a couple hours before I kind of just want to mute it and play in silence. Well, let me turn it over to Purnell if he's got any notes for us.
I mean, you were fairly concise with everything you had to say there. You nailed most of, if not all, the points. The game, in my opinion, though, like, it's not a bad title per se. I'm not sure if it's by the, I think it's by the same studio that did that game I did called Ken Duo. A couple months ago, because it looks very similar to that. And if it is, I feel like compared to the, when you compare the two games, Ken Duo just kind of takes it, because the mechanics for Ken Duo are a bit more interesting to do with the two characters manipulating the environment. Whereas with this game, it really just boiled down to like a pretty rote, like, precision platformer. Good music, like you mentioned as well. But the lack of the narrative. The lack of narrative and whatnot, it just boils down to, like, here are some levels you can beat. And if you're looking for that, you'll have fun beating those levels. But
I'm pretty sure it is a different developer than Ken Duo, because Ken Duo actually had a sequel come out this month. So,
ooh, well, hopefully I'm looking at that thing because I did like Ken Duo. But yeah, with this one, it's like, it's just, it feels like if you're just itching for yet another double jump dash wall jumping, yeah, you know, platformer, but without the meat and potatoes of like the narrative or the world or getting power ups or collectibles or anything,
yeah,
then you can get that here because it's not a bad game, but it's also not nothing that's going to make you go, whoo, trying to get me some Ziggy. Get this Ziggy one. Yeah. Also, did your Ziggy have a top hat?
Yeah, I think he did. And I think I just thought there were sunglasses because that's what I wanted. I don't know, man. Saw what I wanted to see.
I also want to see sunglasses, so I totally understand.
Yeah. I mean, who among us has never wanted to be Jesus, sunglasses?
I would just throw it off. I was like, he's wearing this. Like, he's got a top hat on. This is a dapper bolt of lightning. I don't know what's going on here, but hey, whatever.
Back when Tumblr was a thing, one of my best friends, she used to have a blog of only screenshots of video games where the characters are wearing sunglasses.
Nice.
And it was pretty great.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Was it called My Future So Bright?
I mean, I don't think so, but I think it was just called Cares with Shades, like C-H-A-R, Cares. Is that how you pronounce it? Because I know it should be Chars, but I mean, it's short for characters.
Oh, okay. I think so.
I've never actually, now that I think about it, I've never tried to pronounce, like, the shortening of character out loud.
Cares.
I'd say car, yeah. Char 20, like Char 20 or Char 10. But like writing, creating a variable, that's about the closest I get.
So anyway, Ziggy's $5. What do the two of you think of it?
Oof, that's a tough one to rate. I'm gonna take you on my journey here. I'm tempted to give it a deny it, not gonna lie. But I don't think this is a bad game. I just don't think there's a ton to it. We're just swimming in games like this. I do appreciate that if we're gonna go precision platformer, I feel like we got the precision part right. That makes me nervous at this price point, but I think this is an accurate, tight game. For me, after careful consideration, given the price, I have decided to rate this an F it, why not? Especially for Xbox users, because let me talk really quick about the achievements in this game. You're going to get a lot of them, even if you're bad at this game, especially if you're bad at this game. You're going to get an achievement for doing the tutorial. You're going to get achievement every 10 times you die. That means I had 5 achievements within like 5 minutes. That's insane. You're going to get achievement pretty much every level, I think. So I think if you really like precision platformers specifically, and that's really your jam, and you want a single evening maybe of, yes, like the description says in the Xbox Store, adrenaline-filled experience, and all you need from it is to be a very precise platformer, I don't think this is a bad game. I think it priced even at only a few dollars, we do just have so many platforms out there to choose from. It's competitive out there.
Cornell, your thoughts?
Well, honestly, I think she kind of nailed it on the head. Like, the game is... it's definitely an enjoyable game if you sit down to play it.
Works.
And I'm not knocking it for that. So if it sounds like I said I was knocking, if it sounds like I was knocking it, then you are incorrect for thinking so. However, by that same token, I do feel as though it's not exactly something that's going to push you to go, man, I got to get this guy, get my hands on some Ziggy. Got to get my Ziggy on. if you're just itching for like that one more precision platformer in your life,
yeah,
well, then this wouldn't hurt you to play. This would be a game that you'd enjoy. But it's you got a couple in road. You got a couple in order to get to before you mess around with this one.
Yeah.
So I'll go with a try.
All right.
Cool. Sounds good. Next game, Crow Country. There we go. Developed and published by SFB Games. Released May 9th on Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $19.99. The year is 1990. It's been 2 years since the mysterious disappearance Edward Crow and the abrupt closure of his theme park, Crow Country. But your arrival has broken the silence of Mara Forest. If you want answers, you'll have to venture deep into the darkness of Crow Country to find them. Pernell, what is going on in Crow Country?
So Crow Country is, I don't even know if I want to call it a throwback survival horror game, because I can't think of too many back then that were top-down walking around. So much as like, you know, 3D large sprites or whatever. However, it does carry a lot of really wonderful elements in that regard. So in that capacity, it's a pretty good game. Like, you play as Mara Forest and you're exploring this Crow Country, and they don't give you a lot of info as far as you're there initially. All you see is a portfolio on the back of on the hood of your car telling you you're looking for Edward Crowe and you've been commissioned to look for him by another person. As you walk around this location, these facilities, you hit a number of the traditional survival horror tropes. You have inventory items you want to pick up that can unlock doors or help you use to solve puzzles. There are a number of items you could pick up for help, either for weaponry, ammo for that weaponry, healing, and so forth. The one thing I like about this game, though, is that there's not really a big issue with storage space like in a lot of games like this, so you're not going to be running around looking for storage kits or storage containers to swap items around, which was, to me, even though I understand why it existed in survival horror games and even grew to appreciate it,
it was annoying.
I don't want it. Yes, like you find yourself and someone's like, man, I don't want to leave this item behind knowing I might never come back to this area, and yet, bam, I'm stuck. Now, admittedly, if anyone's listening, were to make it so that you could put an item down and come back for it later, I can work with something like that. I can make some moves with that. But most of the time, it's like if you put it down, it just mysteriously vanishes. Like, don't give me that. but anyway, I digress. There's no storage issues. You just get items and use them. There's maxes of item types in this game, but you're not going to be like, oh, well, there's a health kit. I want to pick it up. Nope, can't pick it up. Your quote-unquote inventory is full. You're only full when you're full up on med kits. If you come across a situation where you want to attack an enemy, as you see on the screen, the control schema that I chose, because there are two different ones, is I hit the left trigger to bring up my pistol, and I can move the target with the left thumbstick, and when I'm ready to fire a bullet, I hit the right trigger to fire off a shot. You have a maximum number of bullets, and depending on the gun, you may or may not have to reload your gun as well, so you'll be messing around with that. Interestingly enough about this survival horror game, though, is that as you're walking around, you'll come across a number of boxes and bottles and the like that you can potentially find items in, but you have to burn a bullet to break them open to see if there's something inside or not. And you might find yourself disappointed to burn a bullet on a box that has nothing in it. You could also find yourself digging in the trash to find items, or you might just find actual trash, which feels like, well, what a waste, but whatever. The atmosphere this game produces that you're exploring it is actually really cool. The music does well to fit the mood. And there are actually situations where you might be asked, like, do you want to touch that? Do you want to open that? And it's not always the best thing to do because you could very well get killed depending on the actual thing, which kind of blows. But therein lies the rub of, like, consider wisely if you want to actually open or close a thing or not, or put your hand in something. But I think they get that element right. They get the music right, as in I can see myself jamming to this OST somewhere down the line. Not with my head banging or whatever, but just like, nice atmospheric tunes. enemies can be pretty entertaining. The one thing that drives me bonkers about them, though it could just be how I'm playing the game, is that they can be bullet sponges, and I'm very much finicky about, so I'm hoarding my ammo. The way the game describes it is if you are far away from an enemy and you start shooting at it, which becomes easy or ish when you find early on in the game, you'll find a laser sight to aim shots at, but if you try to shoot them from far away, they take less damage, which means it'll require more bullets to kill them. So the game kind of entices you to get up on enemies as close as you are comfortable getting to waylay bullets into their faces, preferably faces, because headshots do more damage in this game. However, be careful going for those.
Do you have to stick your hand in a dirty, clogged toilet?
Funny fact, very early in the game, there is a toilet with, I think it was bones in it. And you want to stick your hand in there? And the game was like, well, you can't put your hand in there. Come back later if you got something to fish something in there with. I was like, oh, good. I'm not sticking my hand in there. That's disgusting. But yeah, they do bring that up. It's early on in the game. So I think this game probably even hits a couple of different like survival horror tropes. And they might ingest with them sometimes because the character that you're playing as is fairly quick-witted. And she's not stupid. And she's... Oh, no, she takes command of what she's trying to do. She's not aloof in any way. She knows why she's in Crow Country, and it ain't to pop crows, unless there might be one crow she wants to pop. But I digress. This game is good. Like, I wanted it when I saw a preview for it on Steam, but it was more just that thing I do when I'm addicted to buying games on the Steam store, not so much, oh, well, this game is really on the money. But the review code came through, I started playing on the review, And I ended up really enjoying what I've been playing of it. It's a good game. And I think the puzzles are pretty solid, too. They're the kind of puzzles where you might find something on one side of the amusement park, and you might not use it until you get to the other side of the amusement park later on in the game, or vice versa. So it entices you to write stuff down and keep track of what you want to do. Though, if you don't write something down, one really cool mechanic this game has is every save room you get to has a booklet that contains every memo you found as you explored the game. So it might not hurt you to write things down if you want it on the fly, but if you decide not to, the game does track all those things for you. The game even also has a fortune teller that pops up in different areas of the game that might give you a clue as to where you need to go next. However, the game does limit your use of it to 10. So, you know, choose wisely before you decide you want to ride or die with the fortune teller. So, but end of the day, Crow Country is a country I want to take a visit to, maybe with less blood and less bullets. But if I'm behind the controller, I'm fine with that. Totally a game I can recommend to people. And Joe, what do you think?
It's $20. What's your verdict?
I mean, buy it. Go to Crow
Country. Love it.
Found a new sound clip. next.
Wait. I know this is the norm that we do, but this is the one rare case where I do need to leave a little early tonight. Mom stuff came up, but I'll respond to your thing later on. I appreciate that. Thank you. I'll respond to your message later, and I'll catch you guys later.
Later. Good. Do you have any final words?
Be cool. I hope Brooke enjoys her first con, and congratulations on beating Final Fantasy Legend, Chris.
Thank you.
Enjoy starting the second one if you decide to play it, because I think 2 and 3 just make them are even better.
Oh yeah, so I've played them all. I just hadn't beaten them.
Oh well, if you're trying to beat 2, beat it. I'll catch you guys later.
Take it easy. Next game, Rainbow Cotton, developed by Kritzelkratz 3000, published by In-In Games, released April 8th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Cotton, the legendary witch, is back, and this time in 3D. Get ready for the formerly Japanese exclusive cute-em-up gem to be reconjured. In-In and Success have teamed up once again to bring you a massively improved and for the first time worldwide re-release of Rainbow Cotton. Chris, tell us about your time with Rainbow Cotton.
All right, Rainbow Cotton. So this is kind of the, I would say, like, well, yeah, I guess this is the last like Cotton game that came out before there was a pachinko machine a couple years later. I don't think we count that, but it came out on like PlayStation, so I don't know. But anyways, yeah, this is like the last, the newest Cotton game before they started being rebooted. So this is, we're now in the year 2000. And this is basically originally designed to be a... something of a sequel to Panorama Cotton, which is the behind-the-shoulder rail shooter version of Cotton that was released on the Sega Genesis. Of course, only in Japan, not here. You know, because we can't have anything. Well, I mean, we couldn't, and now we can. Now we get everything, and it's overwhelming. so, this was made for the Dreamcast, and it is fully 3D in that Dreamcast-y kind of way. However, the original game was a little bit panned by critics for having a really high difficulty, no auto shot, kind of nothing really to do but just try your best to get through these 5 levels and enjoy these, you know, really beautiful backgrounds, cutscenes, and adorable enemies and things like that. But so when the task came to remake this game, I think that they took those notes because this is this game boasts that it has enhanced controls. But yeah, to rewind a little bit, so the entire Cotton series is based around a little girl witch who is obsessed with a certain kind of candy called Willow, and basically most of the games are these really fan servicey little fairy ladies who basically trick her into defeating all of their foes with her powerful magic and they tempt her with usually lies about being able to get candy. It's all very comical, but yeah, the And the story is indeed told in this game in full anime cutscenes. That is to say, it's a little, you know, they're very late 90s, early 2000s video game anime cutscenes. So, you know, nothing spectacular, but still really cool and fully voiced. They add subtitles in this version, so it's not, there's no dubs or anything like that. But actually really charming cutscenes that I quite like. And you get them before bosses and also between levels. So, you know, definitely feels like a little bit more adventuresome, I suppose, than a typical shmup. But anyways, okay, so back to what I was talking about with the controls and everything. So, like I said, the camera is situated behind our witchy friend, as you basically point your broomstick in different directions and she continually shoots out shots with the A or Y button. That is to say, this is now a game that does feature auto fire. And it's kind of got that cool thing where if you do mash the two buttons alternatively, or if you're just really good on one button, you can actually get it to shoot a little faster. But that's not super important. The other thing that you can do is you can gather crystals throughout the levels that are dropped by enemies, especially these certain pot enemies. They look like magic pots from Final Fantasy. And they either contain crystals, or if you see that they have a little cage on top of their head, those contain other fairies, which if you destroy them, those fairies join you and become kind of... basically like an upgrade to your firepower. I wouldn't quite say like option ships, because I don't think that they fire, like some of them do fire extra shots, but I noticed that some of them just kind of change the nature of the shots that you're shooting. Maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, the game's kind of chaotic, so it's sometimes hard to see in all the glitter like what's really going on. But no matter. So basically, yeah, it's going through five stages like that, shooting, you know, Star Fox style or Panzer Dragoon style, if you wish, except that despite the fact that they have added in a kind of they call it a lock on feature, but I guess it, you kind of do lock on to enemies. It's not that thing that you're expecting where you lock onto a group of enemies and release like a laser to destroy a group, right? That just doesn't happen. Instead, it's basically, yeah, if you lock onto an enemy, then like your shots kind of go in that direction. But ultimately, you are just shooting with your pea shooter or your magic, which is in limited supply, depending on how many crystals you grab, or, you know, you start off the stage with four of them. And they're different colors, and each one does a different spell thing. That's normal for the Cotton series, which is kind of cool. So yeah, it's a little, dare I say, lacking in terms of what all you can do to get through the stages. Again, it's mostly just pointing and shooting. Because, yeah, you can't just get through on the magic. You can do your best to collect the magic and collect as many fairies as you can, but ultimately, really, the variety comes from the enemy types, which are very cool. Like I said, they come in patterns, and they're very, you know, they're what I call too cute to kill kind of enemies. The secret of mana problem. And there's, like, smiling little, like, I don't know, paint droplets with propellers on their heads and stuff. I don't know, maybe they're eggplants or something, I don't know. But they're adorable, and you just really, you know, you don't want to shoot them up, but then you got to, so there you go. You can, like in Star Fox, you can actually kind of branch off by doing certain things in the stage. In the first stage, you can elect to fight a giant pumpkin, or you can chase down a train and shoot it. Sadly, the train doesn't have, like, the guy that's, like, you know, I'm unable to, quote the train guy from, the train boss from Star Fox 64. This is terrible. I need more caffeine. But anyway, abandoning that joke. So, yeah, it's basically, it's that, and like I said, you have the remade game. They also have what they call the retro mode. Now, they advertise this as being, as replicating the original experience as closely as possible, and you would think, oh, that's the original game then, right? It's actually not. It's the same game, because they rebuilt it from, I guess, the ground up, but it is, like, I mean, I don't know if it's the original game because I never played it, but it's basically this game. It's just on a curvy screen looking thing with a CRT filter. And you still have like the auto fire and stuff like that. And I think they do take away some of the improvements. So maybe that's what it is. But NN has actually been posting on Twitter lately, giving controller codes, like good old fashioned controller codes, for like how to get all of the new benefits and enhancements into retro mode. That's nice. One that they did. And then today they actually revealed a free, basically, credit code. So, because you start off the game with like 5 credits or something. And that's another thing I did want to talk about, is that the game is on a credit system. However, there are no rich kid strats here. You cannot just put in a new credit and start where you left off. You actually start the entire stage over if you die. Thankfully, the game does have an easy mode as well as 2 extra difficult modes on top of the normal mode. But you can kind of tailor this experience to where you like. And in easy mode, I definitely didn't lose for like the first 3 stages at all. And then, like I said, if you use a credit, you do start the stage over again, but you do keep all of your fairies. So if you've rescued a bunch of fairies and you have a whole lot of firepower, you'll get to where you were in a much easier way, and therefore retain more of your life. But yeah, this is not a if you're, let's say, challenging yourself to beat 50 Switch games in 1 year. This one is not going to be an easy credit clear for, or easy, clear for you. It's still a bit tough, even on the easy mode. So, it's not brutally hard like the original game apparently was, according to the reviews. So that's at least good.
Yeah. Well, this one clocks in at $20. What do you think?
Well, $20, I would say approach with caution. Obviously, if you've been collecting the Cotton remakes and such that have been coming out on Switch, this is the final one. So, you're bound to get this one sooner or later. It's got all the charm, a lot of the recognizable things that are in Cotton. And $20 for a shmup with 5 levels is a tall ask, but I bet you that NN is cooking up a physical version of this. It only says available digitally spring 2024, so I don't even know. But I bet you that it's because they're getting ready to have a physical version that it's a little higher. But look, I'm going to call it a buy.
Dreamcast version's a few hundred bucks, so.
Yeah, it's an import too, so, But for that amount, I would say definitely worth it. Like I said, just know what you're getting into, but ultimately I would call this, for what it is a buy it. So,
cool.
There you go.
All right, one final game tonight is a preview of Fishbowl's demo, developed and published by iMissMyFriends.studio, releasing soon on Steam and PS5. Fishbowl is a slice-of-life, coming-of-age story told over a month. Video call loved ones, work from home, sort through puzzles to rediscover childhood memories, do care tasks, and get to know yourself better one day at a time. Brooke, what is going on in this demo for Fishbowl?
This was a short demo, but it made an incredibly big impression on me. So I'm going to try to describe what I really liked about it, although this game is a little bit out there on what it's offering. This is a gorgeous pixel art narrative experience with mini games, almost a little open world thing going on too. We can explore a bit, even though we're in a building. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I think this dev found us on Twitter or something, or maybe somebody called this out for us. I can't remember. This was a while ago. But I remember being really...
If I'm trying to remember, I think a PR guy just reached out and asked if we wanted to take a look at this demo.
Okay, that sounds... All right. Do you ever see a really beautiful indie game and you're like, dang, that's so pretty and cute. It looks great. I want to play this game. And then like so many beautiful indie games do, because indie devs are just got this heck. They put me to shame. Sometimes we read that the game features loss or themes of loss or processing loss or mentioning getting over the death of loved ones or getting through a hard time in our life. And even though you're pumped to play this game visually, you're like, oh, hell no, I'm not even in the mood to cry right now. No, thank you. And you move on to something you think is going to be a little brighter and easier to play. I can't speak for the whole game yet, obviously, but please don't make that mistake with this game. This game has magical, mysterious feeling to it, and it is not a downer. even when it's hinting at darker stuff, it's still fun and lighthearted to play, and it just really makes you want more every second of the game. Can't promise that it won't be sad later on, but what I played did have hints. Hey, a family member has been lost. We might explore processing that a bit. And it was just still so fun to play. I don't know if I've ever played a game like that. It's a bright, colorful game layered on top of like a darker tone, dreamy world. And this world's mostly in our apartment. We work from home. I think it's video or song editing, but it's kind of an abstract idea. They break this down in almost like a rhythm-based mini game that we play with an NPC friend. We need to do a little work. We jump on a video call with her. We knock that out. And it's definitely a foreshadowing of like some different types of games to come within the game. This game has cool themes of having fun, even though we're also kind of isolated in our apartment and going a bit stir crazy. We're not sad about it, but we're having, you know, some weirdness is going on. This is a very timely game to play in the pandemic or for someone who works from home. We play through real levels or days, exploring our home, playing with our stuff. We also play through what I can only imagine is a dream world we visit when we sleep. And we seem to be having memories, but also new experiences within those memories in the dream. The couples with those memories helps us process them further. But once again, they're all a little vague. We're not in the dream being like, oh my God, my grandma died. Let's think about this. Like, it's sort of up to interpretation. My favorite part of this game, no surprise, based on how I came out hot reviewing this, is absolutely the art, which isn't all static. This game is heavily animated as well. A lot of the text is animated. There are just tiny little touches all over it that just scream, labor of love, no detail left unturned, like, discover this game, poke around in its dark corners. This game is a feast for the eyes. It's a labor of love, clearly. Even if you aren't into pixel art, you could appreciate the visuals. But if you are already into pixel art, like, I'm going to freak out. You're going to be out in hog heaven. I did. This is the prettiest game I've played in a while. I adore the soundscape of this game. All the sound effects we experience talking to people on the phone, exploring, editing our work, even reading text comes with cool sound effects that are, I can't explain it, like at one point, both invigorating, but also relaxing and lulling. This is like an atmospheric experience that like lulls you, but that also kind of wakes you up a little bit. It's really neat. If this game is an all-you-can-eat breathtaking pixel art buffet, that buffet is located in a place called ASMR Heaven. Why did I write this line? Why am I so weird? God, I need to start practicing this right before the show. In addition to the asset buffet in ASMR Heaven. Give me a break, Brooke. All right, in addition to the assets being just next level pretty and cute, the color scheme itself is just dead on, very timely for what's in right now, but also classic. It's got kind of some vaporwave hints going on, but not like over the top Dixie cup crap that we're seeing a lot all over the place. Of course, the art is my fave, but it's hard to pick a fave aspect of this game because I love the puzzles, and I don't normally love puzzles. I also don't like when a game has different types of puzzles. I feel like a lot of them try to do that. They don't pull it off. I love the video calls. I love the mini games. Normally, when we jam a bunch of different concepts in a cute indie pixely art like this that feels like it might be smaller, it's not, but that's not obvious from the Steam page before you play it. And it does feel like it came from a harder team. A smaller team. I usually find the variety a bit forced. I don't find this mix of different mechanics forced at all. It feels very consistent and calculated. It feels like every part of it that you experience, no matter how different from the last part you experience, is still the same game meant to be that way and was nailed. I feel like they nailed it. It's very cohesive. This game feels like a very tight project, regardless of the fact I do think the team size is small. What I did play of it, I find it to be something I can't complain about at all. I have zero complaints or call-outs for this game in its current form. Looking forward to what comes next, of course, as we get further into a demo or maybe a release later. Towards the end of the demo, we learn the reason for the game, Fishbowl. We receive a memory box from our mom from when we were a kid that has some of our past favorite treasures in it from our childhood. After solving a puzzle that comes with this box, we find ourselves in possession of, in addition to other things, a toy fish and a toy bowl. We barely remember this thing, but it remembers us, even though we definitely don't remember talking to it growing up. Now we can talk to this fish. We set it up in our house. We talked to it for a while. It's very excited to be there. And while it's clear this game is going to have some magic in it, and it was hinting at that before the fish showed up, the fish shows us that things are about to get crazy, and I cannot wait to see how we develop that. We do in the demo right after that. This game definitely left me wanting a lot more. Can't wait to see what comes next year.
Well, we don't have a date or any kind of price to discuss. The only question is, should people check out the demo, and should they wishlist this game on Steam?
It's
absolutely please wishlist the game. I tried a few minutes ago to find this dev's Twitter. I think this game is going to be really cool. I think it deserves some support early on here. Yeah, we don't have a price on this game. We don't have a release date, but I've been on a streak here where, like, if you've been hearing my reviews lately, I'm reviewing a lot of games that have this sort of theme and environment to it. If you're just listening to me at face value, of course, this is, they're all different. But yeah, I've reviewed a lot of games that kind of seem like this description when I look at it objectively. If this game were out right now and it were completed, and it just didn't drop the ball from here of what I've experienced, if it just doesn't disappoint me from here on out and it were out now, all those other games should be shaking in their boots, because I'm not going to name any specific games we review, but we've reviewed some really good stuff, and I feel like this could maybe blow that stuff out of the water. I think this is definitely one to keep an eye on. I've wishlisted it, and yeah, I'm going to be signing up for alerts. I was really impressed by this.
Very cool. All right, that is it for this episode. We made it through.
Wow.
Fairly short one, not a huge one.
Like an hour.
Get weird, in it's just and me out. And Brooke at the end.
Yeah.
I know, has this ever happened before?
I know. Whoa. Purnell usually sticks it out all the way, but life calls and, you know, family first.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I wouldn't want to hang out with me either. So.
Wow.
Well, music we do.
Music this episode, I'm going to play something Animal Crossing related, just because I'm in a chill vibe right now. So we'll play something from Animal Crossing related. Big thanks to you two for being here, hanging out the whole show. Big thanks to Purnell for coming on, doing his thing, and to Big Adam for coming on, chatting MotoGP with us. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Nope.
One day, friend, a sadness pierced my heart and rended it asunder.
Oh my god. Same. $100.
I blame.
So, did you ever read Pokey the Penguin?
No.
Alright, well, you're gonna regret it.
I blame Italians.
That. I'm blame Italians. I'm going to send you some links. Get ready.
Okay.
Is that the recording?
Well, well. Samba time. Bossa and the samba are so close. Most of us don't know the difference. But what I'm going to do today is the samba with the Afro Cuban.
Back.